Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Indie Corner Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got my awesome guest here. We just talking about it before the show. We haven't talked to each other for like 7 years on our shows, I don't think, on the show, but I used to have him for my guest as on Blog Talk Radio when I did Independent Corner. So this is the new Indie Corner Radio because Independent Corner got stolen by some people, by the way, and I had to change it to Indie Corner Radio. Yeah, I was pretty pissed off. But please welcome Adam Steigert. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me. As always, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Again, we haven't spoken for so many years, man. It's been
I
an
know.
interesting career since we've spoken last, you know?
Yeah, you're like, oh, video chat. I was like, wait, we didn't do video chat back then. It was Blog Talk Radio, and that was all through the phone. You know, you'd have
Yeah.
to call up a number and all this other
Morgan was on
BS.
that,
And
right? Morgan? Yeah.
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 I actually got to meet Morgan and hang out with her. She came when I was in LA. She became my LA homie. That would come and we would go to the coffee shop there in Burbank and just write, you know, together and stuff like that. It was so
What
neat.
is she doing? Is she still working in the arts or is
I
she no
think
longer
she's
acting?
left California and went back home for a little bit, but I think
Yeah.
she's, I mean, she still has her California agent, and I think she's still getting, if she gets a gig out there, she'll go. But right now she's been concentrating on local stuff in Texas, I think. So I'm not
Yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so funny. I adore her. I miss, you know, having her as my co-host. Honestly, I keep trying to get her back in, but she just like she did it for so long, and she's just like, I'm done.
Well, you get burned out. You know what it is. You got to have a love for this nonstop and live
Yeah,
this.
and she got busy, and she was in
Yeah.
California at the time. Maybe. Now that she's not, maybe I can convince her to do some stuff with me, but I don't really want to bother her. I message her every now and then to check up on her and see if she's doing good and just been.
Well, if you do, again, just give her a little reminder of that time we all talked together. Adam was talking to me on the podcast about
Yeah,
you.
definitely will. I bet she'll remember that because she remembers a lot more than I remember. I don't remember shit. I'm getting old, man.
Well, we're about the same in age, aren't we? I'm 36 at this time.
Oh no, I'm 41, so a little older,
A little
but
older,
not
sure.
5 years older. That's
Yeah.
not, wow, that was math. I did math. Oh,
Well, it's an easy number. It's an easy number.
yeah. Then thank you for making me who I felt right then and there that I was doing good. And you're like, nah, it was easy. Well, bring me down to earth. Thank you, Adam.
Sorry about that, my friend.
You know, it's okay. Adam, I, you know, yeah. So. We're gonna go into some more stuff like because I think back then I wasn't as I don't know. I would love to say that I've matured as a you know, as an interviewer, but back when I'm listening to I have a bunch of throwback Thursdays that I do and I listen to some of those and I'm like, ooh, cringy. And I'm like, really? I asked that question or I did that and stuff. So I'm hoping that maybe now I've learned a little bit more. But my big question now is, you never really ever got into your childhood and
Yeah.
stuff. Were you sort of always like this gung-ho filmmaker guy, or were you, is did that sort of become something that you ended up doing?
That's a good question. I actually don't think I've ever even really talked about it too much publicly. As a kid, I was always wanting to be an entertainer. I always wanted to entertain any fashion I could. And ever since I was a kid, you would go back and ask my grandparents, because I was raised by my grandparents, what did he want to be when he was a kid? And it was always film something, you know, director, producer, he wants to make a movie. I didn't have the best upbringing when I was very young. And then I had a little bit of a situation as I got older with my parents. So a lot of that art became a way of venting my frustrations and venting or expressing myself. So that is really how I developed into that career. But I was inspired by like people like my grandparents, people like George Romero, you know. People like teachers, just regular old teachers that had taught me in the arts throughout the years. Mary Finnerty is one of those individuals I would really like to give a shout out to. But anyways, my childhood was tough. I had a lot of tough things that happened when I was a kid, and that helped me create and be the artist I am today.
Oh, so you said George Romero. I want to get back to that. Was it like the Dawn trilogy, the Dead trilogy of Dawn of the Dead, Night of the Living Dead?
It was. You know, excuse me. You know, there. When I was a kid, we would have TNT Monster Vision. You probably remember that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Monster Vision or Horror Nights or whatever they were. And basically, when I was a kid, the first horror movie we ever saw was Return of the Living Dead. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the kind of spoofy one, right? So I thought that was part two. So I'm like, forever in my young childhood, I was always like, well, where is part one? What is the first film? Because this says Return of the Living Dead. There had to be something before it, right? So I ended up coming across Night of the Living Dead. And as you may know, Night of the Living Dead has a very different tone than Return of the Living Dead.
It's not comic-y. It's not funny.
No, no. So I watched a few minutes of that movie. It was in black and white. It scared the shit out of me. So my grandfather had to watch it with me just until it was done so I could actually say I saw it. After that, I found out there were sequels to it. And I was excited about it. And so then, yeah, I started looking into his Dead series. And Dawn of the Dead was next up to bat. And I just loved that story. I loved the art behind it. The cinematography, the story structure, the epic scale made on such a condensed budget in a sense of like Hollywood mainstream film at the time. He's an icon to me, you know, an idol. One of my highest achievements, and this could be a silly achievement, if you will, was having my name linked to George Romero on an IMDb press post once. that was just a lot of fun because I'm like, I really have made it where my name is hyperlinked in blue that has George Romero's name on it. Oh my God. It was a thing. But anyway,
What was it for?
I want to say it might have been either Ombus, Alien Invasion, or A Grim Becoming. I want to say I think it was A Grim Becoming. Is what
I would imagine that would be. But what was the link?
Oh man, it's been so long. It was just it basically referenced his name in the press release.
Oh.
And about my inspiration and all this about George Romero, and that's all I can really remember from the article, which is probably bad that I only remember that part. But just to be tagged in his name, actually in my office behind me, I actually have a check from George Romero from Dawn of the Dead. It's signed and everything from George Romero. Obviously, it's authentic and he had to get appraised and all that nonsense. But yeah, he actually have his signature right there, right behind this here green screen, right in the back of the room.
Nice. So yeah. So did you check out are you one of those people that loves to go to like all the sites and stuff? Did you go see like the mall that Dawn of the Dead, you know,
I did.
Was in?
Three times I saw the Dawn of the Dead mall. Each time the area got smaller and smaller for George Romero's like shrine that was there. And have you ever been there to the Monrovia Mall?
I have. No, here's the funny thing. I went when I was with a bunch of friends and we were like sort of all hungover from going to a horror convention and stuff. And so I don't think I was completely 100% like there. I wasn't driving or anything, you know, but I was like not, you know, I was kind of a little sick, but I was but there my friends were like, hey, we're in Pittsburgh, we're right by the Monroeville Mall, you know, let's go and check it out. And I'd seen Dawn of the Dead, but I wasn't a huge, you know, not a big zombie fan. But yeah. You have to go see the mall. So we went there. I wish we. It's back in the day when I was never taking pictures or doing anything like that. I do that now more, and yeah. And so I'm kind of bummed out about that. But maybe
You know what's funny about that? My grandmother, when I was in high school, because I was raised by them, she said to me, "Marry a girl that loves the same movie that you do." And I said, okay. And I got, I was, I have my wife, Kristen, who actually has a big tattoo of Flyboy on her arm. And that was done before our time together. So it's kind of interesting because like she's basically embroidered or a logo to the George Romero film.
So that was it, right? You saw that and you're like, okay, well, I'm going to follow my grandma's.
This is the woman.
I'll follow my grandma's orders. Did you ever tell her that? I'm sure you did.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. She's heard that story probably so many times. She probably hear it now watching this and roll her eyes.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, that's sweet. I love that kind of stuff. And so you got inspired by, you know, all these great people. You went off to make movies, you know, or mm-hmm. whatever. What was like, did you start with short films?
No, I went right into it.
Of course.
I went right into it feet first. I mean, they weren't great films, of course. Yeah, I went right into just making as big a film as I could right off the get-go, and that hurt for a couple of years, but you know, we made what we did. We did what we could, I guess you could say.
Well, exactly. That's all you can do, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's a good learning experience. I have other friends who have talked about, you know, that they went into making a feature film before starting off on shorts, and they're like, man, I really should have started off on shorts, but you know, they finished their films. Well, and
the way that I looked at it is shorts, in my opinion, this is my view just from being in this business as long as I have, they don't generate the money that a feature will.
Right.
Okay. So I always was underneath the impression, don't do fan films, don't do feature film, don't do short films. Pardon me for saying it like that. Always stick to the, you know, the full film, hour and a half, at least go for that. And over the years, my films actually have gotten smaller than an hour and a half. They've gotten to an hour and 20, hour and 15. And then, you know, one of the last ones I just did was a web series called the Grim Mini Series, Final Fracture. And that series, man, it was altogether, once we released it as one film, it was 44 minutes or 46 minutes, I should say, from title credit to the end. So, I mean, you know, now they got ads. They fill up those spaces with all those ads, you know, those 15 minutes of ads.
So it becomes like an hour and a half.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Or at least makes the hour accrual, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. Which maybe that's why they do it. Because I was wondering always why Tubi lets you have shorts, you know? Like, I'm like,
yeah,
that it seems very YouTube-y, you know? Like, not what I imagine Tubi to be, but
you know, but here's the thing that I, excuse me, here's the thing I've seen these days. Everybody is all about short little bits underneath a minute. You know what I mean? They want it edited down to underneath a minute because they just want to keep scrolling and seeing what's out. That's why film right now is not doing super great, is because all this social media technology that we have at our fingertips by our phones, it is just making feature films not as exciting as they once were. Plus all the drama that we've spoken about with Marvel and DC off camera. I mean, all that stuff has hurt the industry in big ways in the entertainment industry.
You know, I kind of agree with that. And I was actually, so I was talking to a friend of mine and, you know, and we're talking about Marvel, and I kind of just mentioned, I mean, this is a sad thing to say, but I think comic movies are dying. And
yes.
And that to me, sort of, because I know like Marvel said, oh, we got the next 10 years. DC says, we got the next 10 years mapped out. And I'm like, dude, I don't think you have 10 years, man.
No.
Like, if you guys don't, if there's not come some kind of resurgence, you know, and that's why, like, Marvel is, like, struggling right now to, like, you know, oh, we gotta push things back and you know, all this other crap. And I'm like, dude, what you need to do is you need to go back to what you were doing, which is like maybe two movies a year, if that, you know, and stuff, so that, you know, people aren't getting fatigued and getting, you know, tired of all.
Well,
this.
You know what it is? I don't know if people are so much fatigued. I do think there may be superhero fatigue setting in, but I think what it is between the public policies and public outbursts from the companies, I think that has hurt them. Like pretty bad. I think like Warner Brothers, especially Disney, is experiencing it, but you can't continuously put out subpar films. or subpar TV shows or incomplete projects. Because the moment you start doing that, as we're seeing right now, the interest level starts coming out. Because what was it? They put out like 10 or 14 films and with including the TV series in like the last 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And most of them are not praised. I'll say that. Most of them are not praised. So, I mean, what my favorite films of Phase 4 may be different than of what yours are in Phase 4.
Well, let me know. What are your favorite? I want to know that stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, currently, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever is up there. Surprisingly, I was actually surprised how well I liked that film. But Loki was really good.
Loki was good.
I did not care for Thor as much as I was hoping for.
I was kind of bummed out by Thor. The beginning was great and epic, man. I was like, why did the Guardians have to leave, man? Because them working with Thor was fun, and I enjoyed that. But then once they left, it was sort of like, okay, now what do we...
But they edited it. They cut it down so dramatically. Like, they really cut down the role of the Guardians in that film. Like, they should have used that more to their advantage than some of the other things. I don't like how that movie ended either with... who is that at the end? The kid? Eternity is, I think, what her name is supposed to be or something like that?
Yeah. And no, you're talking about Love?
Oh, Love. Is that who it is? Yes. Yeah. Love. Yeah. Yeah. So, here's just an example of that. I mean, that doesn't interest me. I understand you're building the future, but at the same time, give me a story interesting enough so that I want to keep following the future of these characters.
Yeah. Well, you don't have a future if you bomb.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's what people don't realize and think about is the fact that, you know, you can say, oh, I'm going to set this, like the Eternals. The Eternals bombed, like, badly. Yeah. And they're like, you know, oh, we have all these plans for the Eternals. And I'm like, well, you know what? You're not going to, you know, like, nobody's going to care about your plans because, and I, like, people keep saying, oh, the Eternals are going to come back. And I'm like, I really hope not. But,
If they come back, let them be split up in different films scattered throughout whatever.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, like, we never got introduced to these people. Yeah. And people are like, oh, you never got introduced to Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm like, the Guardians, but the Eternals wasn't written by James Gunn, who did a great job with the, like, that was the best thing James Gunn's ever done was the Guardians of the Galaxy.
The first one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like the second one too.
But the second one too. I'm excited about the third one.
Yeah. Like,
not
I'm saying
happy
like
about
whole...
his DC, but I'm happy about the third film.
I didn't mind the Suicide Squad.
That was all right.
I thought, you know, I was surprised how much I cared about a little CGI, whatever guy, little guy, that little weird.
The rat guy
that our got killed, and then, but he turns out to be all right at the end.
Yeah.
You know,
spoiler.
Spoiler. Well, I mean, if they haven't seen it by now, you know, Suicide Squad, then I don't know what you're...
But we can't forget Spider-Man No Way Home, man. That was a great film.
It was.
I think maybe Sony will say differently, but I think the marketing, and I think the fact that a lot of these companies right now are not transparent on their stories and relying too much on leaks, but now they're trying to sanitize people that are leaking information, you know, or censoring people that are trying to leak information. I think they're hurting themselves by doing all that.
I think they should have leaned into the fact that they were going to have, instead of make it a big surprise reveal, which all of a sudden out of nowhere, everybody already knew. They should have had a trailer that showed all three Spider-Men together, you know, like before the movie, because they did it after the movie.
But well, I don't mean to cut you off there. Sorry, go ahead. Finish what you were trying to say.
That's all I was saying.
Oh, my bad, man. I didn't like, because I bought the DVD, or the Blu-ray, rather.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like the fact that they advertised it with all this deleted scenes and then didn't put them on the Blu-ray and then re-release the film for us to pay again to see that. I didn't pay for that. I didn't like that. I thought that was bad, distasteful, just like what they did after Homecoming. No, not Homecoming. What was the second one?
Far From Home.
Far From Home. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever, man. Those titles are not the best titles.
My dad's favorite one, just because he's going to Sicily or going to
Venice,
where it all. So he just likes to see it for all the, you know, Venice places and stuff. I You know, I liked it. I thought the second one was good. The first one was okay.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't. I honestly did not care for Michael Keaton and that, you know, stuff. Like, I thought he was okay, but he wasn't.
You know, John Leguizamo, is that how you say his name? He was supposed to
Leguizamo.
play. Yeah, Leguizamo, he was supposed to play the Vulture. Do you know that?
I did not, but.
And then Michael Keaton was originally offered it. He passed on it. And then they had basically signed, from what John Leguizamo says, like, oh, geez, man, John, what John says,
Right.
he says they had contracts signed, and then they had come to him because Michael Keaton came back to them asking if he could get the role back. And, you know, he said, oh, okay. And then they said that they would give him something else in the Marvel series. And I guess that never
That
transpired.
hasn't happened yet, but I'm
Yeah,
sure.
he gave him a small, or offered him something small, and he's like, no, you were going to give me this lead role, and now you're going to take that from, like, so
Yeah, that's kind of messed up, but.
yeah,
That's
show business.
Hollywood. I don't even know why they went crazy about having. I mean, I guess the idea is he plays a vulture and then he also plays Batman. So it's Bat and Vulture, I don't know. But like honestly, I didn't like that movie. There's way too much Tony in that movie and not enough Spider-Man. I felt like there it wasn't didn't feel it felt like. Like they weren't sure if this was going to take off, so they kind of just were like, "Let's throw in all this other shit." So
Right.
I don't know. I'm very particular about that shit.
Hey, you know what? We all like what we like. You know what I mean?
I like Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, though. I liked Everything Everywhere All at Once better, and
Yeah.
I felt like Everything Everywhere All at Once got. The multiverse stuff, right? Like I felt like that was more you know, Multiverse of Madness than than Doctor Strange
Then
was
Doctor
because
Strange, yeah.
yeah, because like they went to more universes. Like
Yeah.
in the in Doctor Strange, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Doctor Strange, he's like, you know, he's going through all the different things quickly. You
Yeah.
see all these different things real quick, and they show it in the fucking trailer. So it's
Right.
almost like none of that really matters.
Right.
So then you see that, and then he falls down into one area, one, and then he goes to maybe one other one, and that's it. You only get two multiverses
The
in the
highlight
movie.
definitely was the Illuminati, of course. That was,
Right. And
to me,
that
that was
one,
the exciting part.
it was. And I think if they got. If they got, and this is going to sound terrible because this is pretty much the whole movie, but if they got rid of all of Wanda's stuff, you know, mainly concentrated on him just going into a crazy multiverse and getting, having to deal with the Illuminati, I think that would have been a better movie because I didn't care, you know, like I think I love Elizabeth Olsen, but I'm like, you know, like her kids weren't real, so like it was almost just I just didn't care.
Well, there was
Like,
just too many holes, just like the entire phase four. There's just too many holes with no answers and no
well,
structure.
now I want to hear what your thoughts are on geez, we're talking about more of other people's work than yours. Sorry about
Yes,
that.
well, we
But
can
we'll
switch
come back
gears
to
here.
your work in a second.
Yeah, just forget about me for now.
Yeah, let's talk real quick though. I do want to
Yeah.
know what your thoughts are on. Like, because now that Bob Iger has come back to
Yeah.
take over, I've
Yeah.
heard there's a lot of changes being done, and some are amazing changes, and some
Yes.
are, you know, I mean, people are still afraid, like, because they're saying a lot of the woke stuff that's happening with Marvel was from Bob Iger, not Bob Chapek, you know, but he's just fired, like. Probably one of the wokest people there, Victoria Alonso. So
For Marvel, yeah.
yeah, from
Yeah.
Marvel. So I'm wondering if he's really like now just let's cut down and make this a real, you know.
I think what Chapek did, I was not a Chapek fan. Okay. I think what Chapek did is he really hurt the Disney brand. There are quite a few films that they released, and Pinocchio isn't a good example of it. I didn't even watch that entire thing. It got bashed so bad. And it has Tom Hanks. How can you make a film like terrible with Tom Hanks?
And why would Tom Hanks do a terrible movie? I know money,
yeah.
but like,
yeah.
Jesus,
yeah.
You know?
But then now they're talking about doing a Toy Story 5. It's because they're running out of ideas. They're not using originality. And Chapek was all a money's guy where, you know, Iger, he is more like a creative guy. And then the money comes as like the benefit of the creativity. There's no creativity happening. If you don't have creativity or Imagineers was what they refer them as, you don't have like originality. You have continued regurgitated garbage is what you have. Now that the Marvel executive you're referring to, she was in charge of like the digital stuff. One of the big mm-hmm. things about Phase 4 everybody hates is the digital stuff is not up to par. She-Hulk's one of them. I mean, you could probably pick any of the films and say that there's a digital issue that you're just not happy about. How about that the head of that kid in Thor? Remember they went back and they actually touched it up, I think, for that floating head. I can't remember whose son it was. He died in Ragnarok. He died in Infinity War, right? He died in the beginning.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Iris Elba's character.
Yeah.
Yeah. His son, I think it's Hermione. I that maybe not be right. I've been thinking Harry Potter there. Anyways, you probably know who I am talking about by now. I thought that was poor. You should not release a film if it is unfinished just because you have deadlines. Push those goddamn deadlines back. Otherwise, it tarnishes your brand. You can see it's happening now.
I feel the same way even in indie world. You know, people think if you don't release something quickly, you're and I get really frustrated because there is a indie filmmaker who can make a movie, shoot a movie in a week or less, and then mm-hmm. he puts out a billion of them a year, and then he goes and that's his claim to fame, right? You know, I'm going to go and I'm going to make these and everything. And then that's what people expect now, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, we expect somebody to go make the, you know, that. But when you're making that, what you're doing is you're sacrificing quality for quantity. You're
absolutely.
Like, I can make 20 terrible movies instead of making just one good movie and
right.
stuff. And that's what Marvel was doing. You
yeah.
know, Marvel was basically sacrificing quality for quantity, and that was Bob Chapek's fault, because now granted he may not be my favorite, but he was forced with the daunting task at that time making content for Disney Plus,
right?
And I'm like, I hate to say it, I mean, you don't always need new content. They've got so much stuff in the Disney vault. Put them on Disney Plus. Say, we're going to be making these things. I'm still waiting for the Three Men and a Baby TV series they promised us in, you know, 2020. That
well,
never
thankfully,
happened.
They just canceled Willow. I don't know if you're a fan of Willow. They've canceled that.
I heard it was very woke and very not something I'd be interested. But also, once again, yeah. Kathleen Kennedy, I believe, had her hand in that.
I think she needs to go, to be completely honest.
She needs to go.
Yeah.
And I was telling somebody the other day, I think she has something on them. I think she has something on Disney, because there was a time where they were about to let her go,
mm-hmm.
you know, and all of a sudden, they weren't going to let her go, but she had her contract was for a renewal. And
yeah.
I'm like, this is the perfect chance to be like, oh, yeah.
Recent.
Yes.
That was like within the last 2 years. Too.
I know, right?
Yeah.
That was like perfect time for them to go, okay, well, you've done a great enough, you know, great enough, but I think we're going to try to find, you know, somebody to fill your shoes, you know, Jon Favreau, like give him that position because he's killing it with the Mandalorian. Well, he was, I've heard new Mandalorian episodes.
I haven't been able to stomach season 3 thus far.
Yeah, I've heard that.
This.
I haven't seen it yet, and I'm kind of sad about that.
Me too.
I think there's, once again, there's going to be another, like, Bob Iger, you know, let's get this in check, because I mean, when it becomes like one of the lowest rated Star Wars stuff, you know what I mean? Like, that's bad for Mando. I
Yeah.
mean, considering Mando first two seasons amazing, and then his arc in Book of
Boba
Boba
Fett.
Fett was like
Yeah.
amazing, and
Yep.
now I've heard the third season, they just, I guess they just, well, I mean, I don't know. I
I
don't, I
watched the
haven't.
first episode, and after I watched the first episode, I said, I don't think I'm going to be rushing to see the second. So,
Yeah, so
whatever that tells you.
yeah, that's pretty bad. But you know, I mean, that's so. I mean, honestly, Disney is doing what Disney does. Warner Brothers, we were talking about it before the show, because you were saying you're not a fan of what they're doing,
Yeah.
and I was like, well, that's because of Discovery, not that's like all Discovery coming in and needing to change things up, which I get it, like money and some of the
Yeah.
stuff that they're doing, like fixing some of the things that like Warner Brothers with like the Conjuring series and the Conjuring stuff,
Yeah.
amazing.
Oh
Keep
yeah.
doing that, you know, what you're doing
Third
with
one
that.
lacked a little bit, but that was because of probably the pandemic at the time.
I think so too. And
Yeah.
I think it wasn't my favorite, but it wasn't my least. I still don't like the Nun or Curse of La Llorona that much. I think they're
Oh, I can't
okay,
stomach
but
Curse of
yeah.
Lona. I have not fully watched that entire film through either.
I had to for a doing reviews and stuff, and it's okay. Like it's, you know, it just doesn't feel like it's in the same universe. Like they shoehorn, oh, I was the, you know, priest who dealt with a doll, you know, kind of thing and stuff. And they even have a deleted scene where they mention the Warrens, but they don't have it in the movie. And I'm like,
It doesn't
even
feel
with
right.
that,
Yeah.
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because like it just doesn't even feel like it's in the same like
That's why I didn't go
universe.
and see it in the theaters, is because I originally thought it was part of that Conjuring universe, and I like that universe. They have goods and bads, but I like overall the story arc. I didn't know that was there, so I didn't end up going to see it. So I ended up watching it at home, like I think on Netflix or some other type of streaming service. And I said, or at least the first opening to the car where you saw in all the trailers with the girl trying to get into the car, the ghost girl or whatever. But after that, I really did not go much further. That was after the car accident scene, I think underneath the bridge, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay,
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where that is in the film, but yeah, that was the last scene I
that's, I
remember
think that's in
seeing.
the beginning almost, so
Well, there you
you're,
go.
yeah, it wasn't the greatest, but it was okay, you know, like
You
whatever,
know,
it was better than some of the DC shit that's coming out, so like I can't, you know,
yeah.
like I'd rather watch that. And I'm into horror and I'm into comic books, movies and
Yeah.
stuff, and
Yeah.
so I mean, it is what it is. What were you saying?
I was gonna say, I'm just thinking, I started my filmmaking career right kind of when Marvel started making their filmmaking career. And one of my first films, I said, you know what'd be cool? Seeing what the MCU was doing at the time with Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk, I said, you know, I should try and do that. I should try and make a shared universe of films. So
Right,
that has been,
transmedia there.
yeah. So since then, all my films in one form or another connect to the previous one. But you don't have to see that one previous to see the one that we're currently on. But if you have,
Right.
you get those little extra nods and tidbits in there and story arcs. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy because we're talking about Marvel. I'm just thinking to myself, I kind of started right when they kind of started.
So do you have your own Avengers, do you think? Like, have you know,
Yes.
put them all together?
I have Horrific Evil Monsters,
Yep.
the Horrific Evil Monsters.
So tell us about that. Like, what? So was that really like, did you think, oh man, this is my Avengers, and you're
I
making
did.
it?
I did. I wanted all the colors to be like very vibrant. I wanted it to feel like very comic booky. But yeah, I had been setting the seeds for, or sowing the seeds, I should say, for quite some time. And it's interesting because originally, when we were talking about doing the Horrific Evil Monsters, we were originally going to have some of the characters from previous films return as like the ensemble. The problem is, over the years, between egos and different production companies coming in to make these films, you know, a lot of people became disconnected with one another. So when we went to make the Terrific Evil Monsters, I looked at that and I'm like, how do I now bring these characters back together, even though none of these actors want to return for these roles? So I had to basically recraft the story within it to make it all fit in a very cohesive and respectful manner to what had come before.
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point, because sometimes we don't think about it, but like, you know, time, you know, after a while, some people tend to not like other people or whatever. We live in a terrible time right now, I feel like, where people just like hate on somebody, and then somebody goes, well, I don't like that person either, even though I don't know them. I'm going to block them, preemptively block. And I'm not going to lie, I've done that to myself. And I feel now that I'm like calling myself out on it, I'm kind of noticing that, you know, look, I'm, you know, if somebody says, oh, I don't like that person, my thoughts shouldn't be like, oh yeah, I'm down to not like them. It should be
your own,
exact
your own
opposite.
Feel to it. Yeah. Yeah, you should put your own interpretation to it or view.
Who knows? I mean, somebody you may not like, I may like, for completely different reasons and whatnot. I mean, if they screwed you over badly, I mean, I may be aware that not
of that
to
situation.
Trust them as much. Trust them as much, but I try not to tell too many people not to like somebody. I just, sometimes, you know, of course, if you don't like somebody, you're going to let them know, like, okay, well, you know, I've done that before too. Like a friend of mine was dating somebody I didn't like, and I let her know.
You voiced your opinion on that?
Yep. And then she deleted me. And now we're friends again.
Well, that's
good. Because she realized how much of a jerk he is, you know, and stuff. Like, I was right. Gee, go figure.
There you go. Now you're redemption.
I'm never right. So when I'm right, you know, like
you got to take those.
I know. I'll take that for a win. I'll buy that for a dollar.
Buy that for a dollar.
Yeah.
Now that is one reboot I would like to see, because Peter Weller, or Peter Walker? Weller.
Peter Weller.
Weller, right. I would love to see a reboot of RoboCop with him returning, but he's getting old too.
Yeah, I don't think he would return unless he played someone different. Like if he played like the boss, you know, or something, you know, I'd be down with that. But I would want a younger. That seems to be the thing. Like, you know, James Gunn's getting a lot of crap for his young Superman shit. And I'm like, nobody wants to see, you know, a 50-year-old man already play somebody for 20 more years. And people are like, well, why is he going to play some? Like, dude, are you kidding me? They're going to be there for 20 years. Like, that's the standard now, is, you know, and so you don't want somebody old.
There,
you know?
Again, though, that is a problem, because they're not bringing any new people into these movies. They're bringing repeating people with their families. And if it's the people like you and I who are the diehard fans of these types of genres, stop going to them, stop bringing our children, stop bringing, you know, people doing those events and stuff, it hurts their brand. And I think they need to start really thinking about it, that the adults in the room, in this case, talking about DC, all seem to generally want Henry Cavill. There was a way, in my opinion, there is a way to have done this in a very tactful way in the multiverse. I don't think you needed to just say, we're done with Henry Cavill, the story's done, the whole Snyder stuff is done. I think there could have been a happy medium with that, with Snyder fans and the DC brand, at least to bring them into the multiverse saga. And then when they're in the saga and, you know, you finish the Henry Cavill stuff, then you go over to this other universe and you start getting these new characters as like the beginning stones of a reboot, as you will, of these same characters you've already grown to love, but now I've been totally recasted, and we had done justice to the characters we had brought before. And that's why I think the multiverse is such a great thing for Marvel, is because it will allow those characters to continue on indefinitely if they're done properly. Because there's more than enough stories, right? Mm-hmm. And there's more than enough universes. hey, after Secret Wars, maybe they just do a full reboot of the entire franchise. Who knows? You know, and they go to a different universe, maybe. Maybe they go to a completely different universe and tell a story.
Yeah, it's not, what, 616 or whatever.
Yeah. We're in currently is 616, but like they were just in, what was it, Multiverse. I don't know what it was, Multiverse anymore. See, that's how much these films are just kind of rolling off me. I could tell you stuff about Infinity War, Endgame. The
but
films
you've probably
have come
seen
before.
Those a lot more.
Yeah, of course I have.
You know,
because they're entertaining.
Yeah, I know. I agree, because that's why I got in. See, I didn't get into Marvel and DC, and this is going to give me a lot of trouble. But I mean, obviously, as a kid, I grew up like loving Wolverine and the X-Men and other stuff like that. But like, I didn't get into like the MCU till 2020. You know, till basically the whole world kind of like, you know, because I was like, I wanted Disney Plus. Not for all that, not for Star Wars. I wanted it for some of the old school movies that Disney had. And then I got hooked into the world of Marvel. And I was like, wait. So I started watching from like Iron Man and going like, you know, up. And it was new to me. And then it became even bigger and bigger. And then I started doing a lot more research you know, and everything like that. So I'm not like the guys that have been there since like the beginning. They've been doing all those videos since, you know, like you, but like there's these guys that do these videos and I love them, you know, but I don't know as much as they do, like about like, oh, this is what, you know. And so I was watching one of the channels is Cosmic Circus or Cosmic.
Yep. Cosmic Circus.
No, there's Cosmic
Wonder.
Culture.
Cosmic culture, sure. I know them too.
God, so many cosmics, are they?
Yeah.
Like, do they all, like, I don't know, whatever.
Well, when the name sticks, you got to go with what's good, you know?
All right. And, you know, it's not like they're ripping each other off or anything, you know? But so, you know, I was listening to him talk today. I don't know if you saw his newest video, but he was talking about, and spoiler alert if you haven't, but he was talking about basically, what's going to happen with the Marvel universe now, you know, with all the phase 5 and the fact that just this year alone, we're going to have 7 projects, you know, 3 movies and 4 shows, you know.
I think you're going to see a delay in that.
Six. So three and three, I think, you know.
I think they're going to push it back. Seven. I think they're going to push it back.
Because, no, he said these are the ones that, these are all that's still announced that
are coming this year, 2023.
Yeah. So he said, obviously, we already had Ant-Man. Then we've got Guardians of the Galaxy in May. Yep. June, we have
Marvels?
No, June's.
That's in November.
That's in November. Yeah. June, we have Secret Invasion. In August, we have X-Men 97, which is weird that they're doing it now. But I'm guessing that might tie into, I think they're doing what DC has announced that they're doing, which is they're doing their shows and they're kind of tying them into the live action stuff. So Deadpool's coming around next year. So maybe they want to get X-Men, you know, out there, whatever. So X-Men 97, like I think August or September or something like that. And then Loki is pushed for the fall. And then Marvel's. And then there was one more project that was.
Is it a special presentation? Because
no, I know they've announced those too.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if he even counted those, which I don't think he did. So that's a lot. And he was saying like the people were having problems with the fact that there was so much content, you know, to keep up with and stuff already. And I just kind of agree.
Yeah. You got to pick and choose now, and I'm definitely done with DC. I'll tell you that. I'm definitely done with DC.
Yeah, so you're not going to see The Flash?
I've been torn. That's the only film that I've been torn on, to be honest with you.
Keaton as
yes.
Batman.
Because that's who I grew up on, is that character. I got the trading cards still from the first film. So with the Joker and stuff, it's crazy. So, you know, to me, to see Batman again, the Batman I grew up on, that's tough to pass up, which is what they're trying to do to begin with that And I love the director, Anthony Muschietti. He did the It series. I think he's a great director.
Well, it's funny that they got all these horror guys doing the Lights Out director did Shazam, and he got a lot of flack recently. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see the Shazam director. He's like, I'm done doing superhero films. You know what? It's a cop out because they're getting, again, when you're a director, producers and directors are different things, right? Producers are the people that, you know, make the project happen to an extent. And the director is like the creative eye behind the producer's money, if you will.
Right.
And a lot of people think that the director is the only one that runs a film. Technically not. Maybe on an indie level, it's the producers. Executive producers, studio producers, those are the people that run these films.
Things used to be different.
Not directors.
Used to be different. So it used to be that the director calls the shots. The director comes in. The director's hired. Steven Spielberg's hired to make Jaws. He does the best he can, even though his crew hates him because he's so young, you know, and stuff like that. Yep. You've heard that story, I'm sure.
But oh, yeah. Yeah.
Steven Jaws Spielberg. Fan. You know, yeah, me too. I need to go to Martha's Vineyard sometime. Like,
I want to go too. They have a whole tour there.
I know. I'm so jealous.
I want to go
do it. Yeah, yeah, I'm going to do that someday. I'm going to go there. I got to go back to the Kevin Smith stuff in New Jersey. And I also want to do the Sleepy Hollow, like go on the bridge of the Sleepy Hollow, stuff like that. So I got a lot of shit I want to do. I just haven't, you know.
Well, you haven't done it yet. You haven't done it yet. Time. Yeah.
Is that song?
Got goals. You got goals.
Young, relatively young enough. You know, but anyway, so yeah, so they got so much going on. I completely lost my train of thought.
Visiting places.
Well, before then. I think it was
Sleepy Hollow. Something.
Before then.
Marvel.
We're now just like rewinding.
God.
We're talking about Andy Muschietti, I guess, right?
Yes, like Andy Muschietti, correct. It.
Yeah, and all the
Flash.
Yeah, so you got all these horror guys. We're out there, and they get the chance, you know, to go and make these, you know, these projects and stuff, and then they get there, and this is not their wheelhouse. Their wheelhouse is making low budget horror flicks. Like Lights Out is great. He should work with Blumhouse. But no, they want him because that's what I was going to talk about, the producers. So back in the day, you would have Steven Spielberg who'd produce or direct a movie, and he would be the one in charge. And the producers would come in and make sure things were just done on time, you know, and everything. Right. Nowadays, it's more like TV. See what I'm saying? Like,
yep.
The world of television is more like the world of like movies today too. And so in television, the producers are in charge, you know, and the directors are sort of just called in to direct a couple scenes, and they barely have any creative input and stuff.
And that brings me to a good point too, or brings us to a good point. That's why I've started like self-producing most of the work that I've done over the last couple of years, like kind of getting away from producers in some respects, because with producers, as much as they're good, they also bring some baggage that is unnecessary and it's unwarranted, you know. And that also has played into one of my decisions to start to outsource material, either working with stock footage type folks, doing CGI more. You know, you started off when we were talking about this becoming more reserved in the digital world of working on creative arts. That's kind of where I'm going too. And I'm getting to a point where I'm looking at the last series of projects that I'm going to direct. I mean, I've directed over 16 projects at the moment. I'm getting tired. And you know what? People are not amazed as they once were. You know, when I used to make films back in the day, there was something original to it. There was something new. There was something fresh. Not everybody was making movies in that regard, locally especially. So there wasn't always a huge different choice to pick from and things of that nature, which is good and bad. But, you know, at the same time, you have to ask yourself, maybe I'm getting to a point where I'm outgrowing what is the new norm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe I my creative eye is not what it once was. So like I worked with Immortal Masks before on projects instead of working with in-house effects teams to create these things. By the way, they're really good. That's a plug for them. you know, I'm just getting to a point where I'm really starting to see the politics and just, I just don't want to be around them no more. I just don't. And I'm talking film related politics. You know, maybe I'm still always going to be somewhere in the film industry because, I mean, you just never leave. I mean, you look at you. You did start off with films, right? And now you're doing podcasts.
Well, know? I sort of did podcasts more like, I mean, I started with short films I did for nothing, you know, that I put on YouTube, like that just sucked, you know, and stuff.
We've all been there.
Yeah, which sucks because I can't get back into my old account and stuff. And I kind of want to look back at those, you know, or whatever.
You can't get back onto the YouTube account?
No, because like it transferred over to like Gmail and my old like Hotmail thing won't let me in and just getting, and I
Does
don't know
the
my
channel
old password.
Still exist? Does the channel still exist?
It's, I was an idiot. Well, not an idiot, but I completely put everything unlisted. So
oh,
that,
nice. Now you're
know,
really in trouble.
Yeah. So, yeah, so I'm done.
But just to conclude with this real quick, you know, I like the marketing, man. I like the promotion. I like the press of it all. I like doing those things. You know, I like the photography. I like the behind the scenes. I like sharing with people some of the experiences that I have learned over my career. And it's, you know, I'm going on 16 years now of a career. So, again, it just goes back to the fact that I want to make stories that people want to see. I don't know if you ever read comments on anything that you post in the sense of like films, right?
Right.
You know, various films, each film is different and each film has different comments and stuff. And one comment has stuck out to me pretty bad. And it happened about 2 years ago. And the comment was, this director should kill himself. And I said to myself, I just stepped back that day and I said, am I really to a point where people, fans or other people viewing my work want to just see me killed? Metaphorically, I'm assuming, but you never know with the internet. Because they didn't enjoy my work. I mean, you could turn it off. You watched it till the end.
Yeah,
dude, you watched it till the end.
Or even you watch 5-10 minutes. That doesn't mean like, you know, like.
But there is an old saying, Jonathan. There's an old saying. Even bad press is good press.
Well, that's true. But I know a filmmaker, and I'm not going to say his name just because it's, you know, it's his story, not mine necessarily. But to give you a point, he made movies that apparently weren't received very well, and a lot of people sent him death threats. And he has a family, he has kids, he has all this stuff. They said they were coming, like I think they said they were gonna come to his house, things like that. And he stopped making movies for a little bit. Now has recently said he wants to get back into it and everything. And it wasn't
the climate is not good to even produce anything right now either. I don't know if you're somebody trying to get something produced right now.
Unless you do it for like nothing, like absolutely no money.
Or you do a GoFundMe because everybody seems to be wanting.
I hate Indiegogo now, like or GoFundMe or, you know, all that stuff just because. And I mean, look, I love people who support it, you know, and I've done it before and I don't like it, like myself. I feel really scuzzy sending people messages saying, hey, come donate $5 to my campaign. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I feel like, you know, I don't hate it when somebody does it to me because I understand. But like, I mean, when no is no, you know, when I say I can't do
those,
it.
I get those quite often my own self. And I don't produce a lot of people's projects anymore. And the reason behind why I do not produce a lot of projects is because I've gotten burned on them before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either you don't get the product if you do an Indiegogo and they say, oh, we're going to promise you a DVD and then you never get it. Or you know, you don't know the director well enough or the production staff well enough to see if they're actually going to complete the project in a respectful and well-received manner. I don't want to be sending money to somebody that I think that there's going to be like all different types of innuendos or situations happening on set that I, cause I don't know the actor. I don't know the director, you know, like I don't want to put my name on something after trying to build a career for 16 plus years on somebody else's film, just because I get a special thanks and a credit, or, you know, I produced it and people don't like it. So I'm very picky about it. I get those requests, I want to say weekly, somebody asking me to fund their film or sending me a script pitch. You know what? If I was asking for scripts, I would say, hey, send me a script. But I don't ask for that because I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to produce somebody else's work. I want to produce my own work, and I want to share it with the world, what my artistic vision is. You know, so I save all my money for my stuff, you know, and that's just the unfortunate nature. But here's something you should always keep in mind. If you're not willing to invest in yourself, okay, you're not willing to go take a small interest loan, you're not willing to go take out a credit card debt or credit card money or whatever in advance on it, you're not willing to do the hard work to go to studios to try and get this money, using these social media platforms and like Indiegogo goes back to what you felt before. You know, you feel a little, you know, scummy, like you have to take a shower after, because, you know, nowadays you have Hollywood mainstream people working on Indiegogo, making their projects. And what about us? Us little guys, now we can't get funding from Indiegogo because, you know, whatever. But with that being said, I have noticed quite a few social media campaigns on that platform doing very well this year, surprisingly. Not a lot of them, but there's a couple of them that are doing surprisingly well in the indie community. So we'll have to see how some of those come out. But, you know, if you're just not willing to invest in yourself, why should I invest in your film?
Exactly.
And that's the question.
That's a good question. And some people tell you do not invest in your own projects. I don't know why there's that thing, but there's that thing of like, you know, do that. And I
can tell you why. You want me to tell you why? People won't invest in their own projects because they don't believe in them. They don't believe they're going to make the money back for as much as they're going to want to spend on it. All right. So, you know, typically when I make a feature film, it's in the range between $15,000 to $25,000. I have done up to $36,000, but I don't do those types of films anymore because it's just not worth that type of money to do independent film anymore like that. At least for me. I mean, you know.
You know, the producer of The Killing, that was the third movie that Stanley Kubrick ever made, he talked in an interview and said that he put up $80,000 of his own money. Now, this is back in, understand, this is back in 1956. So
yeah.
$80,000 then is like probably $500,000 now, you know, or something.
Well, I don't want to say over a million.
Yeah, and he asked his dad for $50,000. So he got like $130,000 extra to shoot. So he got like $330 to, or $330,000 to shoot the movie and make it, because that's what the budget was going to cost. And that's what he believed in. You know, he believed in the project. You know, he could have made it for $200,000, but he would have had to, you know, had to cut a lot of costs, and it would have looked a lot crappier, you know, and everything. And he put his own money in. And to me, that made me smile when I saw that, because, or heard that, because I was like, that's amazing. If that guy can go out and do that, I think more filmmakers should, you know, especially since he was even told that whoever puts that money up is going to be second to the company, that the first company that put the money up and everything. Yeah. I think that's an interesting, people don't really realize that, like, you know, with stuff, because people think in terms of independent film these days completely. Oh, yeah. Like, people don't even know, like, studios, you know, used to do this. You know, they don't do it as much anymore, but they used to fund these kind of smaller projects.
You are so right. You are so right when you say that the studios no longer allow directors to direct anymore, because they don't. And I that's one thing that I like about the studio I work with, is because I'm also directing a lot of these projects, I have a lot of say in the way that the project is morphed into reality. Now I have two business partners, Kristen Steigert, who happens to be my wife, and Christopher Burns Jr., who has been my longtime business partner for quite some time. I like to say I'm married to two Chris.
No, nice.
Yeah. And they have both helped me, inspired me on my path to continue to create. One thing I will say about these two individuals that I would say is different than studios is they believe in me. Studios don't really believe in their directors. They just tell them, go out and shoot this. Otherwise, they would let the directors create. They're not allowing that. And
we can say this stuff about Scott Derrickson leaving Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have any kind of creative input into it. Because.
How about Edgar Wright for the first one? Edgar Wright was supposed to direct Ant-Man.
I thought,
and he wrote it. He got a writing credit for that.
He got a story credit, I think. You know,
something. Yeah. He got something from it.
But yeah, he was supposed to do the first Ant-Man, and then he ended up. Then Peyton Reed. Well, I think Peyton Reed has done a great job. A lot of people talk smack about the new Ant-Man, and I was just like, it's not any worse than any better than whatever. Like, to me, it was a popcorn. You know, Marvel movie. Like, this is exactly what I wanted to see. I wanted to see Ant-Man. People are like, pointless Bill Murray cameo. I'm like, any cameo Bill Murray has is going to be pointless. I don't think he knows what a Marvel is. He's just there. He's like, let me just play this wacky character and then walk out. You know, like,
he's there for the paycheck. He's there for the paycheck.
I mean, did you ever hear about how you cast Bill Murray?
How's that? You have to hunt him down? You can't do it by phone. I know that. He doesn't answer his phone or something?
Well, no. So
okay.
It's a different. He doesn't have a phone, or he doesn't something with the phone, but you have to call a number and leave a message and tell him your number back and tell him who you are, what you're doing. And then he will, you know, if he likes it, he'll talk to his agent and stuff like that. So I'm wondering if Marvel had to do that. Like, if Marvel had to call up, you know, or if he, for some reason, was like, take a lunch with Marvel. Sure. But like, he did that with, that's how he got Garfield. So like, he originally did not want to do Garfield. Like, you know, like if they had originally pitched Garfield to him, like regularly, he would have said no. But it said like Joel Cohen, and he thought he was working with the Cohen brothers on a Garfield movie.
Yeah, that's a big mistake right there.
Yeah, that would be an awesome Garfield movie though. Can you imagine the Coen brothers doing a Garfield movie?
I'm a fan of the Coen brothers. I like some
I love
of their
them.
Work.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, they're good. They're good.
They haven't really done anything that I've not liked, you know.
I can't point to anything that I don't like. There was one that I thought could have been a little better. I think it was the Hitchcock one. Am I thinking of the right one? I'm not sure. It had what's her name in it, Scarlett Johansson, and
it was sort of like a film noir type
yes,
thing, right?
Yeah, and she did the whole swimming bit and all that.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, but I have it's been a long time since I've seen it, and I thought it was okay. It had like Billy Bob Thornton in it, if I'm correct. Like,
I think it's been a while since I've seen it. George Clooney might have been in it too. I'm gonna have to look this up after we're done.
I gotta find this out. Especially if it has Scarlett Johansson in it.
I could probably find out here.
Who is wonderful.
Yeah, I love Scarlett Johansson. That's another mistake that Disney made, was the Scarlett Johansson bullshit.
Well, they really... Oh, Hail Caesar?
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, it was Hollywood Fixer in the 19... Yeah, George Clooney was in that. I was thinking of the... there's one that's like the man who... what was the one that Billy Bob Thornton was in that I sort of there it is, The Man Who Wasn't There. That's what I was thinking of. But Hail Caesar, yeah, I would say I saw that in the theater and I go, it's okay, but it's not, doesn't feel like
It
a
wasn't my favorite,
typical,
yeah.
it didn't feel like it had the quirks that that the Coen brothers were
Yeah.
known for. So
Now I'm
well.
excited about Evil Dead Rise. I can tell you that. That's on my. I'm excited to see that. I thought the Evil Dead remake was one of the better remakes we've had. I would say that the Evil Dead remake and the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake in the 2000s. I think it was 2000, maybe. Well, maybe it was 2000 with Jessica Biel. Those are my like two favorite type of remakes that have ever,
I like
been
the Friday
out
the 13th remake. I enjoyed it, you know.
there. Yes and no. I mean that for me, yes and no. I thought it played on too many stereotypical like tropes from the genre, but then they are the ones that created the genre, so
Right, so
I
that didn't
can.
bother me.
Yeah, I just think they played it too hammy.
You know, you put Willa Ford in any movie, you know, it's gonna be hammy. Like it's
Yeah.
just like she is not, she's not an actress, she's a singer, she's a wonderful
Yeah.
singer, just not the greatest actress. But that's, you know, my
And
particular.
let's not even get on the Nightmare on Elm Street. Let's just pass that one.
Oh well, I wouldn't have talked about that. I try to, I don't even think that
Well, I'm
like
trying to think of all the remakes out there that are like really decent. And Evil Dead has all like it stands to me. The Evil Dead remake stands to me as one of the favorites. I liked Ash versus Evil Dead. I like the Army of
I never
Darkness, all
finished
that.
the Evil Dead, and it was because I didn't like it, because I was liking it, I was digging it. But I didn't get to finish the ending of it and stuff. So eventually I will. It's just,
Well, it's leaving Netflix if you have Netflix. It's on its last couple weeks of Netflix.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Have to
Yep.
go check that out. I have to watch that this weekend then. Yeah, it's crazy. I like, well, by the time this comes out, I'll probably be gone. So. Sorry guys, you know, you lost your chance if you didn't see it yet. But yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I think the state of the film industry, because we live in a world that sort of is always evolving, it's always changing. There's always something, you know, like if you were in 1993, right? And then you look at 2023, you know, and you know, completely different times, you know, and that's wonderful. Like 30 years, a lot has changed in 30 years. We still haven't figured out the flying car yet.
No, we have not. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know.
I want a flying car.
I would like a car that flies, sure. Or
Why
hovers at
not?
least.
Yeah, hovercraft.
Yeah.
We haven't really perfected that either, you know.
No.
But
I'd like an electric
maybe.
truck. I'd like an electric truck that could go more than 400 miles without having to be charged.
Yeah.
Yeah, that maybe later in my life that'll happen.
Maybe there. I mean, you know, Musk is working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, he's getting distracted with his Twitter shit. So maybe.
I actually left Twitter because of him.
A lot of people did.
I no longer have Twitter and I do not expect to return to it.
I only still do it because it's marketing stuff, you know. But I don't. I'm not on it as much as I used to be. And it's funny because it was like for the longest time I was not into Instagram. Still sort of not, like, but Instagram is where I can, like, that's where all the celebrities are now. It was Twitter. Now they're leaving, going to Instagram and staying
Right.
there. And so I'm like, that's where I want to see Britney Spears and her being happy with her, you know, just would love for her to stop dancing, you know, doing this.
Oh yeah, she on the I think every video she posts, she's dancing in something.
Almost, but it's like weird. Like it makes me feel scared for her, but I love her. And I
Yeah.
saw like a post last night that she posted like a couple days ago or something, where she was talking about just basically like because of all the shit that happened to her, now she's happy.
That's
You
good for
know,
her.
basically she's
It
able to
took her
live
a
her
while.
life. Yeah. She's able to know what she likes and what she wants to do, and she's able to do it herself. And to me that just makes me smile, but
Yeah.
I would prefer if she did more of those posts and less of her dancing, like weird and shit. Like, it's like, I get it. You can post whatever you want now, but sometimes better to do less, you know. Less is
Well,
more.
that, again, that's like Gunn. Gunn should not be making tweets. I could tell you that. I think he should stop that completely because
See?
it's only hurting himself and the
I
company.
know. And attacking fans in some way or another. I actually, believe it or not, so somebody from my local, sorry, this is all about you and I'm kind of hijacking stuff. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But you'll probably get a kick out of this. There's a
Please.
guy in my local town, like, that has nothing to do with the film industry, right? Sends me a screen grab and says, "You're famous." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" So I look at the screen grab and it's a news article that's about James Gunn and talking about him getting sort of attacked by tweets, you know, because that's all news articles are now, is
Yeah.
like celebrity gossip on Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm like, who cares? Like, you know, whatever.
And that's why, and that's another reason why I left is because that whole Snyder thing rubbed me very wrong. And like I did not use Twitter enough other than to search out gossip leaks regarding DC or Marvel. And I'm like, you know what? DC's burning me and Marvel's starting to lack a little bit. So I'll wait on Marvel. They're still my, you know, still my faves. But DC, like, that's the only reason I was going on Twitter for the longest time. I'm like, this is too toxic. It's triggering and it's toxic. I don't want to be a part of it. I'm so, we live in America, and right now we're living through a period of time in history where things are not as normal as they should be. And whatever that phrasing may mean to someone, to me, it just doesn't, you know, there's too much hate between opposing viewpoints. There's too much hate between, you know, different ethnic backgrounds. I want to say ethnicities, but I can't even say the word, can't roll it off the tongue. But backgrounds, heritage, race, sex, disability, you know, that was always there. It was always there, but it seems like it's now the forefront. In my view, like I personally have cut out a lot of people in my life due to political climate in the United States during the time this time. And that is good and bad, but it has helped me mentally, but has also created a divide, you know, between two opposing ideologies of viewpoints, things to that nature, and only continues to further divide everything, either fan bases, culture, political views. Whatever have you. You're just going to get me going on a rant with this one, but I don't see any end in it. And that's the problem, is I don't see any end in the issue with DC. I don't see any end in the political discord in the United States. I don't see any end in people voicing their complaints on indie film, not realizing or knowing how much work it goes into those films. Telling a director to die, you know,
Yeah,
come on.
that I would say is a little that's taken up way too much. I
Yeah.
will disagree though that people shouldn't voice their opinion on indie film, because if you any just like DC, you can
Yeah.
voice your opinion on the way DC is, and people are like, "Oh, but independent films,
Well, yeah, I
they
think
take so
you're
much
right.
effort." I'm like,
Yeah.
"Yeah, but you know what?
You are
When at
right.
the end of
You
the
are right.
day, when a
But
movie is,
constructive.
yeah, constructive criticism,
Yes.
or what our opinions are, you know,
Yes.
this is why I'm actually going on a deep dive, watching all these Siskel and Ebert, you know, reviews, because I'm
Yeah.
like, can we get back to this where people
Yeah.
like have a good conversation about
About
their
the film.
opinions?
They don't attack the talent and the directors.
Well, Siskel and Ebert
Well,
actually used
yes,
to
they
do
did.
that with the
Yes.
horror
Yes,
people.
they
They'd be
definitely
like,
did.
they actually were even known. I think Siskel even made like said, "If you don't like this, go send a here's the address to Betsy Palmer and blah blah blah." Like,
Okay, well, maybe
that's a
I'm
little much.
mistaking that phrasing on that
I
one.
found that out recently and I didn't even know about that. And I found that
Yeah.
out about recently and I kind of was like, okay, that's pushing it a little bit too far, because I don't feel like, you know, that definitely not Betsy Palmer's fault. She got paid $10,000 to play that role, right? Now, that's, but she was there for 10 days, you know, which I'm like, where the fuck was she?
$1,000 a
one
day.
Scene.
Jeez.
She only has one scene where you see her. The rest, you can just have some, you know, person with hands that look like hers or something. Don't even need her.
I don't think culture needs to be censored in that regard. Let me just kind of refix what I'm saying, because I do agree with what you're saying. I'm just referring to the facts of director should kill himself, this production. You know, if you're giving constructive feedback or even feedback that is not derogatory,
right,
you know, that is acceptable. Sending somebody to somebody's address, that even being Sister and Eager, that's not acceptable to me.
No, that's not. That's not.
That's
cool.
Not acceptable.
But no, and once again, not saying anything. Like, look, you know me. I do Indie Film Cafe, and we review indie films, and we have what's known as a stinkometer.
Yeah,
you know, which is a 1 to 10, the stinky stuff, stinky scale. And
oh, there's
that
Rotten
might
Tomatoes
mean,
too. There's
that
things
might
out there. Yeah.
mean that the movie gets a stinky. Now, we like to make sure people understand that when we say a movie is stinky, we enjoy it generally. Now, sometimes we don't, you know, but we like bad movies. We like movies that we want to show our friends.
Well, you sat through the whole thing.
But there's a one filmmaker who got really upset recently that I reviewed his film, and this other filmmaker who wasn't a part of that project but might have been like with other projects of this guy was yelling at, you know, me and my buddy Paul and everybody that was attached to this review, and saying that we didn't watch, we must have put the, you know, thing on the fast forward.
You took it too
we
personal.
Didn't we didn't watch it, you know, they completely missed. And then the other guy was trying to point out, in a way, which he didn't verbally say it right, but he was trying to point out that I was, you know, when my buddy would say, well, they did this, I would go, well, he, you know, this is why he did this, because, and I would actually, you know, disagree with him on some of the stuff the guy was saying. You know, I get it. Like, I and especially me, I'm a very big, I think things in my creative world, right? So when I watch a film, I'm not judging it based on like whether or not just this is a good film. I see the lights, I see the lighting,
oh, yeah.
I see the,
because
you know,
you're a filmmaker.
Right.
You're a filmmaker.
And I think that way. I think, is this really that good? Or, you know, or does this character comes out of nowhere make any sense for the rest of the project? Because I think in writing, you know, right? Like, what purpose is this person? Is it for comedy? Is it funny? You know, and the person, I think, felt like I was a little harsh and I didn't get comedy. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I get comedy. You know, I
See,
know what's funny.
See, now, I don't know if you know this, but I'm working on Ombus Alien Awakening. That's my next project.
Nice.
So
I'm excited
it's a
for that.
Sequel to Ombus. It's the first true sequel I've ever done. But it's like a direct sequel to the first one. I'm in talks with some of the original cast members, like Sarah Manzella, to return as Lucy Greenheart and stuff. But the point I'm trying to make is I didn't want to sign on to a project like that unless it was being done right. Because Ombus is one of those films that is my personal favorite to have made in my filmmaking career. Fang is another one that is up there. But Ombus is my all-time favorite. And so to do a sequel, it has to be 100% right. And that is what we're working on currently. But I said I wouldn't do another one like that. Because nowadays, everything is just, you know, franchise, sequel, sequel, sequel. The originality is starting to get further and further away. So how do you go back to a film? And this film is very much like a 28 days or 28 weeks later style film, where you see what happened after the events of the first film, the destruction. And, you know, I've gotten a lot of the CGI already produced, and worked with a couple people that, you know, work in aircraft carrier type situations. And I won't go any further with that. But
well, hey, Victoria Alonso is looking for work.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. I'll have to just give her a ring ding, or maybe you can just give her a, you know, a plug in for me.
I don't know. I'm probably never going to chat with her, but she'll probably listen to this and be like, oh, God.
Oh Lord, yeah.
I don't want to work with them.
But anyways, that's my next baby, and I'm hopeful of it. But I can relate to what you're saying when you say some of these things. It's all in the writing. You know, the script for Omnibus Alien Awakening is done, but we're still making sure it's better. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're doing all the CGI and stock footage work before the film even gets made, or excuse me, before we principal photography gets made. So there's big chunks of storyboards in the film already, so that when you're watching you can actually watch the film via storyboards and CGI. And then you'll be able to go in there and we'll be able to look at it and say, is this the right angle for the actor? Are we missing something from this? That is the approach I'm going to with this one, and to a fun element, a lot of digital work, you know. But yeah, I definitely can relate. I can definitely relate.
Well, I mean, my partner for Indie Film Cafe, Paul, always says writing is free, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it's the one thing you don't have to really worry about as far as, you know, money goes. And unless you work even in the studio, like, you know, when you're first writing a spec script, it's free. You know,
Yeah.
It's, you know, or whatever. Then later, maybe they want to rechange it. They want to rewrite it. They want to do this or that. But that's, they're paying you then, you
Yeah.
know, and everything. But still, it's like, it's not a lot of money that, as opposed to like big budget, you know, paying the actors, paying the special
Now,
effects and doing all that.
can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question? Have you ever screened, I should say, a film in the theater before?
You mean like our own film or
Yeah,
whatever?
your own film.
No, I mean, we haven't done that yet. I mean, it's something we've been thinking about doing.
One thing I would recommend if you ever go in and screen your film in a theater is, like, I have this rule. I always have two different spots I like to sit at, either the very front of the film so I can't see the people behind's reactions, or the very behind everybody, like the very last seat. So either very first or very last. I
Yeah,
don't
you
care.
don't
I'll
want to be
sit
in
up.
the middle.
Yeah, no. I don't want to hear what people are saying about it during the film. You know, I just want to hear the cheers. I want to hear the boos. I want to hear those things as they're happening in real time. But you get two different perspectives from sitting from the front or the back. And it allows you, if you have this privilege, because sometimes, I mean, over the years, I've been able to do multiple screenings of films. I can sit back and relax and not relax.
Yeah.
Stress, I should say, in the back of the theater, just seeing if everybody's getting it and watching expressions. Or I can just sit in the front of the theater, not see anybody's expressions, but listen for the audio of people's views on the film throughout the film. Like, are they gasping? Are they shocked? Are they running out of the theater? Are they, you know, all those fun things. So there's just so many different things you could do.
I agree. I think that's a good thing. I just watched The Room, you know,
What's his
the
name?
Tommy Wiseau movie,
Yeah.
and I watched it with Paul. We went up to see it at the Kimball Theater, and they're having like a film festival, and they invited Greg Sestero, who's like the lead star, he's Mark, you know, from The
Yeah.
Room, and he
Yeah.
was there, and he was there to promote some stuff, and but he didn't sit with everybody, like, and I'm sure he's seen that movie like a million times, like,
Yeah.
because he goes on tours and tours every year with that room, promoting the Disaster Artist and other stuff. And but anyway, he was in the back, like he was at the table where he's supposed to, you know, sign stuff, you know, waiting for people to, you know, to be done. But he was like very interested in hearing, like, he was like, wow, everybody seems to be really into it, you know, and everything. And so many of them had never seen it,
Yeah.
and were like room virgins, and they were so young. They're all like college kids and stuff. And I love seeing that, because that to me is like, even though that's a terrible movie, and I'm sure Tommy Wiseau got like, well, this better kill, you know, this guy should kill himself, you know, things.
Yeah.
And I'm
I don't mean to
like,
laugh at that. I didn't.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. Do you think Tommy Wiseau gives a fuck? You know what other people think, really?
No, but I think you'd give a fuck if somebody came up to him with a gun and
said,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know?
But like, you're not getting that. You're not getting some actually like sticking a gun in your face. So I think the lesson to be learned is like, you know, there's degrees of like, whatever. I mean, some people, you can make the greatest movie in the world. Like you can make, I'm going to just say Citizen Kane, just because that's like the most popular one to say, but you can make a Citizen Kane and somebody is going to say that movie was so terrible that I hope that filmmaker never made another movie. And then you go, are you kidding me? Like that was,
that's Orson Welles. I mean, come on, he did War of the Worlds.
Right. But people would still say that because we live in a society right now that just allows anybody to say whatever the fuck they want, whatever the fuck they want to say it. We kind of allow that to happen, sort of, you know,
free speech, right?
Right. And you know, you can always respond, I think, to those like letterboxed comments or something and be like, oh, thank you. I'll keep that in mind, you know, when I make my next project.
Yeah.
I'll keep you in mind when I make my next project. I'll have a character named whatever, last name, whatever your screen name is there, and have him killed, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
stuff. So there you go. I mean, it's beauty of being a writer is we're gonna get shit on all the time.
Well, if you get a chance to check out, I don't know if you've seen Fang or the Rificula Monsters or even
I think a while ago, but I need to rewatch them.
If you don't get it, if you haven't had a chance yet, get a chance to watch it. I'd love to hear you blast on Rificula Monsters or something. I mean, talk highly of it, of course.
I don't know. I like it's weird. I've gotten to that point, like, because I was talking to some people about it, and I was like, I don't even know if I want to like review other people's films like on Indie Film Cafe that I know, you know, because, you know,
I can respect that. Sure.
I mean, it's hard that. Because like I might say something and then people get really offended and then they unfriend me or block me because, you know, and not that necessarily I wanted to work with them, but like I'm very much a person who doesn't. I'm a people pleaser, you know, a lot. And I kind of, you know, you can't really be a people pleaser and make movies.
Well, that's the truth.
That's, it's the damnedest because, you know, you understand you're not going to please everyone, you know.
Right.
There'll be people who love your films and people who don't.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, when you're making a film, one of the biggest things that I've always had trouble with, not trouble, is when you're making a film, you have a cast. I've always built my cast up. And I do that because you get more out of your actor if the actor is feeling like they have the power to tell the story that you want them to tell. And I look at, you know, some of these films and people, like we mentioned earlier on, people don't know what goes into making these films. The egos you have to stroke to get a project completed. Now, I have a big ego. But some of these actors out there, their egos are even bigger. You know, somebody is only on a film one day and now they've become an actor for life. I mean, come on. I mean, you do one film as a background extra and the next thing, now you know everything about film and
now you're a screen queen. And
Which
you know I honestly hate that title, but I have Screen Queen Campfire, so I can't say anything. But like,
well, you recognize it, though.
I do, and I feel like to get to actually earn that title, you have to have at least done three horror films. That's my thing, you know. At least
and there has to be a little bit of an age with it, just a little bit. Not doesn't have to be crazy, you know. Three films would be good, but maybe over the span of like your early 20s or something, or I don't know.
Yeah, like kids can be scream queens, especially if they. Actually been in a bunch of movies that you know what I mean
Jenna Ortega, she's new to, like, I don't want to say she's new, but she is somebody that I would call a screen queen, even though she hasn't really done a lot of stuff she's done stuff in a short period of time in the horror realm.
And she's done two Scream movies and then the You
and then
show.
Wednesday.
So I mean, I don't know if Wednesday's necessarily horror, but it's got horror elements, so it could count, I guess. I mean, she's sort of, and she's about to do Beetlejuice too, by the way.
I heard that. Yeah.
Be like Lydia's daughter or something, which I'm
That would be
like,
interesting to see.
well, that would be interesting to see. It'd be funnier if Lydia is played by Christina Ricci, like as because I don't know if they would bring back what's her name? The original Lydia. Winona Ryder. I don't know if they would bring her back. Are
I
they?
heard that they may be. I heard
Okay.
that she might be the daughter of her too, like you were just talking about
So
the
yeah,
Winona
so
Ryder character.
that would be funny, but I think it would be funnier if it were Christina Ricci because, obviously the Wednesday thing there,
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
it's because it doesn't really matter, if you want a younger, if you want a younger what they just are they gonna explain why? I guess if you put Beetlejuice in the makeup, it won't it'll it's just the makeup, or whatever. But like Michael Keaton's older, how do you explain a ghost getting older?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
Well,
do ghosts get older when they die, like
maybe they'll do some movie magic with it or something, and
oh,
be
don't tell me
amazing.
that, because now it's giving me was a Billy Loomis vibes,
Indiana Jones 5, man. Enjoy, get be prepared. Be prepared, because you're gonna see a lot of it.
Oh
You're gonna
God,
see a lot of it.
I don't like it. I don't like it. This is it's scaring me, man. It's like, all
Did
right,
you
so
see the
that means
trailer?
no.
Oh
I mean,
yes, take a watch.
I saw some of it, but I don't. I saw like the first trailer. I'm
Yeah.
trying not to watch the trailers for stuff because
Yeah.
I'm getting it's ruining the movies. They do it in indie films too. They ruin their own movies, and I'm like, don't put so much fucking shit in the trailers.
Yeah.
We don't need to see the whole story in 2 minutes.
Right.
You just show the beginning of it.
I've heard that a lot about filmmakers these days, that they are not they're just putting too much into their films in the sense of like trailers. I remember when I released the first Horrific Little Monsters trailer, one of the complaints were that it was too long. And the reason why it was too long is because it gave too much of the story away. So we went back to the editing room, I recut a new trailer, and that is the trailer we use from now on. But that's out there. If you watch it, you'll know exactly what I mean by it.
Yeah, well, there you go. If anybody watches that horrific trailer, horrific, wow, that
Well,
sounds terrible, horrific
yeah.
monsters trailer, but like horrific trailer.
Yeah, we get you.
Yeah, so if you check that out, good. So what else have you been up to? So you got the new Ombus movie.
Yes.
Are you doing anything else?
I'm working on a book, actually.
Nice.
Who knows when that will be ever made, but I've been working on that for a couple of years. I'm going to produce at some point, or co-produce, I should say, a documentary on my filmmaking career.
Oh,
One
very
of the
cool.
one of the things that I have done for many years is I've kept a lot of footage, behind the scenes footage that no one has seen from all my films. So I'm going to eventually release that in a feature film in some fashion. And I'm excited about that. It gives a little bit more history about me and the characters and the stories and the universe of horror films I've been trying to tell with inside this goreverse is what we call it. Yeah, that is going to probably be one of my retirement projects.
Nice.
And I'm just going to continue to be a big supporter of the film industry, do marketing on previous titles, things of that nature. But that is where my career is looking. So I'm looking probably when I get to my early 40s to be on a path to either the final film or, on the path to a temporary hiatus. And then whatever happens from there on out, either if I make another one or I don't, that's where I lie.
So you're sort of pulling a Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I noticed he just what is it? He just kind of announced recently that he may be, or somebody said that he filed something for his final film.
Yep. It's
And
called The Movie Critic or something like that.
you
Which.
have to ask yourself, as a director, as a storyteller, when is enough enough? And when have you done the film? Like, what film should you end on? And for me, I just don't feel that I should be ending on a Grimm miniseries as my last project. And because Ombus was so well received and has such a huge fan base, the most popular film ever made next to Prisoners of the Dead. And I say, you know what, this might be a good opportunity to explore that last project, you know, and tell that story and maybe go out on a high note. Who knows? Maybe I'll go out on a high note with it.
I was just thinking, Tarantino's last film should have been a Tarantino multiverse movie, you know, where he just has all the characters from all his different movies come back, and you know, they all have to meet up and have one last
Do you remember? I don't know if you know this, but Zorro and Django were supposed to do a film together.
And then they were going to do like a comic or something, or they did a comic for it or whatever.
I actually just bought The Mask of Zorro. I love that movie.
Was that the Antonio Banderas one?
Yeah, the first, there's two of them. There's that one and then The Legend of Zorro, which I think I want to get next. But yeah, I just picked it up in a steelbook from Best Buy, and it's so good.
It's so funny that Banderas has done both Mask of Zorro and Puss in Boots.
Yeah.
Like,
well, his filmography is interesting because he has a wide range. The Mexican, wasn't it? Wasn't he in that one?
Yeah. And then the Desperado.
Desperado. Yeah. Yeah. That's the one I actually meant was that
once,
one.
Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Once also. Upon a Time. Yeah. So, you know, he has a wide range. Then he did Spy Kids. Didn't he do Spy Kids?
Yeah. And he was also in The Four Rooms. You know.
Four Rooms, classic movie. That is a great film, by the way. I own that film.
You know, it was fun, I think.
Uh-oh, you don't like it.
I don't hate it, but I like the Tarantino skit and the Rodriguez skit. The other two skits don't really do anything for me.
Which one is the one with the bed? The hooker in the bed.
Oh, that's Rodriguez.
Yes, I love that. That's my favorite one.
Yeah, that was my favorite one too. Then Tarantino had one where it's like,
cuts the finger off.
Yeah, cuts the finger off, and it's like Hollywood-ish, and you can just tell the dialogue is so Tarantino. But the other ones are like, there's like a witches one, that I'm like, oh, like this just felt. I think like
I didn't like that one.
I think Allison Anders and did it, and what?
With the cauldron and the naked chick, and she comes out of it. Yeah.
And then there's some other one. Where I see, that's why I don't like it, because I just totally, it's totally forgettable.
Oh, I know what it was. I know what it was. It was the guy with the girlfriend. It was the guy with the girlfriend with the gun, and he accidentally paged into or plugged into the wrong room and all that. And he goes up there to deliver something, and he's got a gun, and his wife is all tied up, and they're
sex fetish
or something.
Didn't like it, but
yeah, it was,
you know, it's funny because, like, I mean, 2 out of 4 ain't bad, you know, but it's funny because those are the two last ones, I believe. And so you have to sit through the first two. And the first one had, the witch one had the chick from, that I like, from, fuck, what's that movie? Or was that show? It was Sybil, Sybil's daughter or whatever, in it. I think it was Sybil. The girl, the red hair girl.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I can't picture what film it is that she's done, though.
Alicia Witt.
She's
been a shit ton of movies. She was in Vanilla Sky, Urban Legend. She was the lead in Urban Legend. She was in Dune, the David Lynch one. Bunch of stuff. So I love her. I adore her.
Wasn't
I think
she
she's
in?
Great.
Wasn't she in Hot Pursuit or Hot Shots? Rather, wasn't she in Hot Shots also? I think it's the same girl I'm thinking of.
I don't know, maybe. I wouldn't, it might be Hot Shots Part 2.
Yeah, Part Deluxe or Ducks or what?
Yeah.
What did you say it was called?
It's Part 2.
Yeah.
Do
you like those films?
No? I think they're okay. They're not They're just silly. No, she wasn't in that one. She wasn't in those. I'm trying to think of who. Let's see, Four Rooms. Who you might be thinking of? Because I'm sure there's somebody who was in. The missing ingredient. It was called The Missing Ingredient. was the thing. Madonna was in it. I didn't even know that. Shit.
Yep. I
I
remember
forgot.
that. In that segment, she was actually in.
Yeah. Let's see. She was Lily Taylor from The Conjuring was in it. Jesus. That's a great cast. Ione Skye from Say Anything, you know? She was in that segment, you know? Like, that's a great cast of women, but like,
The story lacked a lot, yeah.
yeah, it just was not interesting to me. Which kind of sucks for short because, you know, like a short, you need something to grab you know,
Yeah.
in like
I,
a short
you
amount of
know,
time.
yeah, and you know, that's funny you say that because everybody seems to be wanting to get into that grungy horror again. A lot of the like people that I talk to, interest parties when I look at horror forums and stuff, because I look and research this shit all day long, and I want to make a film for the market. You know what I mean?
Right. Oh, that's a smart way to look at it.
And I look at the forums and I see what people are talking about. Science fiction's always hot. Zombies are always hot. And then I started thinking, you know, we're talking about the end of the career that I've been kind of trying to chart out my final stories. I look at a Fang sequel too, possibly. I don't want to be known for just sequels, but out of the films that I really adored, those are the two that I loved. And to do a Fang sequel with the really grungy, disgusting horror again to push the bars, that would be kind of fun. I would like to do
Yeah,
something like
you should
that.
do that.
Yeah, and we'll
See, you
see.
keep saying things that are gonna make you keep making more movies, so
People say
don't
that.
worry. What?
Yeah. People
Yeah.
say that. People say you always be, you know, you just say that right now. But I'm getting to a point where I think I'm getting to the end, man. I really do
But
as a
you
director.
said you made 16 films, though, right?
I either produced, I've directed like 10 feature films. Yes. This will be my 11th, Ambas.
Can't end
So.
on 11th though, by the way. You can't, you know. That's
Oh,
just
is this a wrong number?
well, I mean, it's just a
Odd
it's just
number?
to me, I hate odd numbers. Me personally.
So I got to
The
go
only odd
12.
numbers I'm okay with are like 15, you know, where it's got like five till you're there. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why I'm okay with 15, but I'm not okay with like 17, you know. Like, I would hate that, you know. And my
Yeah.
friends all laugh at me. I'm very much, if I have the choice between an odd number and even number, even if the even number is lower, I will go lower, you know, just because I don't like odd numbers. I'm weird, you know, I like
Hey, you
everything
know
to be
what?
even.
That's okay. That's okay. Maybe you'll have to inspire me to do number 12 in a couple years.
Right. Well, that's why I'm so glad that Tarantino's ending it on his 10th. You know, I'm like, if
Nice
you
round
ended it on
number.
your ninth, I'd be so annoyed.
Yeah,
You'd be like, no, I would write to Tarantino. I'd be like, Tarantino, you must do this. And he'll be like, who the fuck are you? And go
well, you
back.
know, just to kind of conclude on the Grimm miniseries thing, just real brief, you know, my wife created that. So I kind of like
Nice.
we were talking about doing outsourcing of things, masks and prosthetics and, you know, stories. You know, she came to me, pitched this idea, and I just sprinkled in a little bit of the Grim Reaper, and she did everything. I mean, she wrote everything, and I
Good.
produced and directed it. So you could see again getting to a point where I'm help, you know, I'm doing something, but it's not me spending hours writing a story or whatever. It's me working on it, of course, but I don't know.
I had a moment back in 2010, so it was a long time ago, 13 years ago, Jesus, where I was like this close to just quitting the industry. You know, and it wasn't because of people or Facebook. It was because of how stressful, you know, making your movie is. You know, it's
Oh God. People don't know.
people don't realize this. People
No.
think, you know, people think like you just say this and then put it out and then it's done. And it's, you know, it's a lot more work. But I was so burnt out and I was tired and I was talking to an actress, and I was like, "I think I'm gonna quit producing and directing movies." And she looked at me. She goes, "Well, what are you gonna do?" I go, "Maybe just write, you know, like because
Right.
writing, man, Like that's what I want to be right now. I just want to be a writer, 'cause like honestly, I'm writing right now and I have never had the best time of my life, you know, than I am when I'm just sitting at my computer by myself, typing shit out late at night, having a blast. Like that is my happy place. And maybe it'll get stressful when I'm doing rewrites and I have to have a deadline or something like that. You know, 'cause right now there's no deadline. I can do what the fuck I want.
Well,
But
that's good, man. That's good for
yeah.
you that you have that ability too. That's really good.
But here's the thing, you know, I miss being on sets, you know, and I'm so glad I never quit. I never did. I didn't because I loved it, you know.
I would always go to somebody's sets, but some people get intimidated very easily about or with me when I go on their sets. You know, I have a certain procedure of how I handle things. I'm very contract oriented. I'm budget oriented. I am schedule. That's the biggest thing, schedule oriented, because no one's time is more important than my time. You know what I mean? And that goes for you too. You're no one's more important than your time.
That
So
should be
when I,
everybody. Like everybody should feel that way about themselves.
right. So if you're coming to my set, we're gonna have a good time, but we're gonna be in and out. We're not here to joke around all day. I can't do those 24-hour shoots no more. I'm not a young man anymore, you know? I have
No,
a
I get
rule
that.
now. I have a rule now that I have to be off set 12 hours. It's union standards, and I adapted it. We have to be off 12 sets or 12 sets, 12 hours, and then you come back. That's the minimum that you'd have to be off set. So I adapted that policy so that you can rest, rejuvenate. I try to shoot for 8-hour days. Sometimes I'm not lucky with it, but I won't go past 10 or 12 is generally the rule.
Oh yeah. We had one shoot that just kept going and shit, and the actress that we had, I'm not gonna say her name or anything, just don't want to call her out on this because this was my mistake, and I didn't realize this, and this might be very helpful for indie filmmakers to understand. When you have a lead actress or actor or somebody who you are having from out of town, you need to get them done first. You know,
Same with
you can,
extras. Same
yeah,
with
you can
extras.
always bring another actor who's local back, but you cannot keep an actor or actress waiting. And I did that as a mistake, because we wanted to get one guy done in one day so that he didn't have to drive 2 hours to come back like the next day or something, you know, right? Which, you know, the whole idea is like then we lost a lot of work that we had to make up the next day with that actress, and she couldn't do her stuff. She had to go to bed. Like she was like at that time she had to work in the morning, and like she was doing Zooming and stuff. So she had a freak out, like, you know, thing moment where she was really upset, and I pulled her to the side, you know, because I didn't want to say all this stuff in front of everybody. And I said, "What's going on? Why are you?" And she was telling me she was really mad that I'm wasting a lot of her time here when we need to get this done, you know, and stuff, and we need to get her stuff done, and everything. And I said, "I totally understand. And I know you're tired right now. And I know you can't do it. So just go to bed. We'll shoot around you tonight. We'll have you come back, and or tomorrow we'll get all the rest of your stuff." And it'll be all you tomorrow, you know, and stuff. And she was really happy about that and very, you know, but she was, I mean, it's a learning experience, you know.
I was looking back today, earlier today rather, and I said, you know, I've only had one film picture, however you want to say it, that I ever announced that I actually had to cancel. We were, you know, a film called Meet the Loonies. I posted about this earlier today. It's the only film out of my filmmaking career that I announced, but never made, and then publicly had to retract and say we end up canceling the film. That was for many reasons, but it goes back to partly ego, not mine specifically, but one of the lead actors had a money ego trip. Even after offering thousands, they still wanted more. And I said, you know what? The project's not worth that. You're not worth that. And I ended up pulling the plug. But that was a very hard time for me because I was going through a lawsuit over Ombus to try to get the rights back to it. And so I had to make a decision because I was also directing in post-production Star. So I had like three big things going on. I said, you know what? We're going to cut the loonies, use that budget that I got left over or had left over to finish Star. And I actually provided Star to another editor and worked on this lawsuit to get the rights back to the film. And I'm glad I did, but you know, Star suffered as a result of that film, or excuse me, as a result of all that. And the loonies, I don't think I'll ever work with that actor again because they put such a poor taste in my mouth. So,
well, I mean, did you like the story from the Loonies?
Yes, and I ended up taking a lot of elements of the story of the Loonies and putting it into Fang.
Okay, that's what I was going to suggest. If you,
it lived on.
Not necessarily want to redo it again, but like do something similar to it or whatever. So that works. You know?
Yeah, it worked out. But at the same time, I mean, it was just the level of disrespect an actor could give to somebody that specifically wrote a film for them, you know, and it wasn't the context until it became the context because they were looking for excuses probably to get out of it, which I don't understand, especially with the amount of money they were being offered. So whatever, water underneath the bridge. But I was just thinking about that today, you know, so.
Yeah, it happens. There's always a lot of ego, but there's a lot of ego and, you know, working at Walmart, you know, know what I mean? Like you know, I worked at Walmart and I dealt with a lot of ego and shit and stuff. And I'm like, dude, you work at Walmart, man.
Yeah.
Like you're not curing cancer right now. So like, you know, don't take life too seriously, but you know, but then again, it's a job, you know, and some people do take their job, you know, very seriously, you know, or whatever. And so, and some people might take it way too seriously and might not.
Well, this actor that I'm thinking of right now did it very disrespectfully. They kept demanding more money and I would keep finding them more money. Then they would say, I don't like this in the script after already telling me. So I was to the point where, you know what? Who are you?
You're just done.
Yeah. I said, who are you? I don't care what type of name you have. You're not, you know, this isn't your film. It's my film. And if you're going to degrade it like that, then I don't want you in it. So that relationship has been forever tarnished, unfortunately.
Well, you know, sadly that happens a lot in this industry.
Maybe he can start off with an apology. That would be a good start for him.
Yeah, well, even then, I don't know if it's worth it. Sometimes
it isn't.
I think the thing is, here's the biggest thing I learned, and I don't know if this is how you feel or whatever, but it's not called show friends. It's called show business.
Show business.
And a lot of times when you get involved with people, it becomes a friend thing. Like, I'm working with you. You're my friend. Let's work together. Bad things might happen, you know, or whatever. Most times they do. And then you have to pull business over friendship and they don't like it. So you guys cut ties as friends. And that sucks. But in the same sense, you just can't let that, you know, because I have a lot of people that I've worked with in some way or another that have now don't like me, you know, because of one thing or another that happened in our business deals and stuff. And in the beginning, I, once again, people pleaser in me is like, oh my God, why do these people not like me? This is terrible. What can I do about it? And now I'm like, I don't give a fuck. You don't like
me. Yeah, I'm to that point too, right?
Yeah. If you don't like me, it's fine. I mean, I can't be loved by everybody. There are people I still love, and if they didn't like me, I'd be sad. But after a while, I'm gonna have to like be like, I just don't care anymore. You know, after a while, because unless I can bring that relationship back, I can't. You know,
I know that feeling because I've invested in actors and actresses, two that I can think of specifically that I like. Went all in on, you know, I advertised them. I worked with them. I developed a career. One of them, you went to college for the art of film and acting as a result. And, you know, these people are now better than me or better than working with me, or I don't know how you want to say it. They're above working with me, no. Not because they've achieved something, but because they, I guess, were wronged in some way, or we're not doing union related projects, or whatever the issue might be. But I know that feeling of feeling like you have a lot of, like, I know a lot of people, I'm sure you know a lot of people too. I've been on sets where there's a couple hundred to almost 1,000 people before, and I've been on sets that were like 3 or 4 people. So, you know, I understand camaraderie, I understand creativity, but I also understand the business now. I didn't in the beginning. Like you were saying, people pleaser, that was me. I would sell my soul to get a film made. Now I'm not so I'm not so hasty, if you will, to go out and do that.
You're more hesitant.
Very much so. Oh yeah.
And that makes sense. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, you have to get to a point in your career where you're just willing to understand that, like, I'm gonna have to sacrifice friendships that maybe aren't, you know, some of them, if I looked back at some of these friendships, they were very toxic.
Yes.
And I didn't think of them as toxic.
You didn't realize in the time. You were too much in the moment.
Right. You know, and things like that. But sometimes it's really great that, like, the world works out the way it's supposed to, you know.
I'm getting to that perception as well.
I've introduced people to other people, and then they've left me for that person.
Yes, I've done that too.
Gave me a lot of abandonment issues, you know, fear of abandonment issues and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fine, because now I've sort of accepted the fact that, you know what, I'm sort of doing a service to these people, because if they want to fuck me over to work together, then they deserve each other, you know, kind of thing, and that feeling and stuff. And I mean, and wonderful, you know, some of them have gone on to create amazing film projects that I will forever tell them, you know, to their face, like, these were good. Some that made things that, like,
why'd you make this? You went from me to this?
Yeah, but then still, you know, like, they continue to work. So, I mean, you probably know some of them, you know, and stuff.
Well, we do have a lot of cross.
We have a lot of mutuals, you know, which, wonderful. But I don't hate, like, look, if you're out there making an indie film, fucking good for you, you know.
Right.
If you break out from indie and go Hollywood, that's even better. Like, I'm not gonna be like one of those people that are bitter and yelling at, like, why do they get to go do that? You know, right. I'm like, they worked their ass off, they got where they're at, you know. That's their, you know, that's the thing. So I'm okay with it. But is there anything else you wanted to kind of let people know about? Is there projects, any stuff?
Not specifically projects. No. I just want to say thank you for giving me some time to speak. I know we've been talking
for a
bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and, well, longer, like, than we were planning to, but
I told you had to stop me. You had to stop.
You know, you have to stop me too. I talked way too much.
And I would love to do this again. If you ever are interested in talking again, there's just so much we can continue on with, more updates. I'm sure we can get with the nonsensical DC universe. I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, that could be an old podcast.
Its own itself. Show. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to let people know, like, they can watch a lot of your movies on Tubi. So, yes. You know, they should go right now.
Yeah. We're on every streaming platform in some fashion, either Vudu, iTunes, Google Plex. Play. We're on everything. Tubi is very, we love Tubi. We've made a good relationship with Tubi. I would definitely recommend checking some of the films out, because they're good.
There you go.
Or they're bad and you should shoot the director.
Stop that.
Sorry.
Keep bringing it up. You're really, I think you feel terrible about that. That's sad. Because
that comment really hurt me.
I know. But, like, it shouldn't.
I don't even know who it was. I don't even know the person. I don't know who
you
it
probably
was.
Don't even
I can't
remember
find
the
it
name.
Now. Right. You know? Just the thought, though, that people want that is hard to swallow, you know?
But, you know, anybody can say whatever the fuck they want on the internet. And most of the time they don't really even feel that way. You know what I mean? They're just
Right.
in a bad mood, and they you caught them on a bad day, and they watched your movie, and they were like, I don't like this movie, blah blah blah. You know, I'm gonna
And
say
they don't
my
like the
piece.
director.
I don't like the director, blah 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 blah. But I'm like, you keep watching his movies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if this person is so bent out of shape that he doesn't like your films and he's still watching them,
That says something about
that
him.
says something. That says
Yes,
that
it does.
it says something more. So
Yeah.
just hang in there, man, because that person likes your shit. He's a fan.
Yeah,
You
he
know,
definitely
only
is.
fans continue to watch the films. And watch, if he listens to this, if you're out there and you've said that nasty ass comment, you're still watching his movies, you know, that's on you, bro. You know, that's completely on you, and you fucked up.
Yep,
So,
big time.
you know, if he's gonna keep making them because they're fucking, they're, you know, I mean, they're not easy to make, but they're,
Yeah.
you know, they're definitely not easy, but they are, you know, but they are something you're passionate about. So don't stop because some douchebag saying it. Now, if he said, I know where you live, or, you know, something like that, I'd be a little bit more worried. Like, once again, go back to Siskel and Ebert saying,
Yeah.
here's the address of somebody. That's a little bit
Well,
sketchy
that's a
on
little,
that.
yeah. But,
So.
well, anyways, my friend, it's always great to speak with you. You know that I'm one of your biggest cheerleaders and fans. You know what
Thanks.
I'm saying?
Thanks. You're the only one. That's okay.
Oh,
You know?
yeah, right. Yeah, right.
It was a pleasure talking with you, dude, because like you and me, we both have sort of similar,
Yeah.
you know, feelings and similar stuff. And I mean, you said you've been doing this since what, 2010, maybe earlier?
I've been doing it on and off since 2003, but I took it serious in 2008.
Yeah. See, same here. Well, I mean, I did the short film stuff,
Yeah.
you know, in 2002, and then I started Independent Corner to sort of get, you know, understanding of what it took to make a indie film, you know,
Right.
or whatever, and
Right.
stuff, and try to get advice. I don't know if I listened necessarily. If I
Well,
did, I would have
that's how
probably.
you learn, is you don't listen and then you
You
make the
don't listen, then
mistakes.
you make all the fucking mistakes,
Yeah.
and then you go, oh, okay. And then I re-listen and I go, I should have done that.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. I think the best film schools are commentary tracks. That's my opinion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. I love doing commentary tracks too. Like you watch a film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
We'll have to
I
do
mean, I
that
did
sometime.
mine and I was trying to figure out what like technical shit to put in it. Because I didn't want a commentary track where I was like, we did this and that person did that and that, you know what I mean? Like, and that happened and that, you know, thing.
The key is to have more than one person in it. Don't just do it on yourself, you know.
Well,
Have it a
actually,
cast
I
member
like
or
ones
so.
that are by themselves, but I don't like
Oh,
talking by
yeah.
myself. But I
No.
like, there's Brett Kelly, a wonderful director from Canada, who made a movie called The Feral Man, and it's got one of the best commentary tracks. And it's just him on the commentary track talking about how he made his first film. It's fucking
Yeah.
amazing. You know,
You know
like.
what's also interesting is our paths seem to have not only aligned in some fashion throughout the years, but our progression in the arts seem to have coincided simultaneously. You know what I mean? You are doing the same things
Well, you've
in a
made more
different way.
features than I have.
Yeah.
I haven't
Yeah, I've
really
done
made
more
any.
features, but you've done more podcasts than I have. You've talked to more people. You've done films. Short films can count.
Yeah, and I mean, I made a feature of Scary Story Slumber Party out of short films, but
well, there you go.
you know, yeah. So I it's almost like it gets annoying because I'm like, I want you to review it. Oh, I don't review anthologies.
Yeah.
What?
Well, come
Yeah.
on now. Come on.
I mean, I get it because it's hard to kind of you have to rate them by each individual movie instead of like all together necessarily, you know? So I get it. But it's
Well,
just like it's frustrating because I'm like it's better than like it should be better. I mean, I don't know. I like it. You know,
yeah,
I'm a little biased, but I
you're a
like
little
it.
biased. Yeah, I was gonna say you're just a little bit of bias, a
A
little
little bit,
biased.
but it's
Yeah,
okay. It's okay.
but
And it's
yeah,
just the
man.
same as I'm sure you'll say your movies are great, you know,
Well,
because you put a
there's
lot of
one There's one I would say is not so great, but we'll say that for a different podcast.
All right.
Let you figure that one out.
I don't even want to think about that.
Good. You know, good. Good.
Let's
good.
Just
good.
Say you've enjoyed all the work that you've done. So.
Yes. I love everything I do. It's I praise the sand that I walk on. Well, dude, it's good to talk to you, and I hope we do this again soon.
Yeah, we'll do this again. Maybe I'll get you on Indie Film Cafe as a guest reviewer, and then you can take shots at at stuff.
Professional shots.
Yes, constructive.
Yes, criticism. Constructive. Yeah.
Because just like you, I'm kind of sick of people not being constructive, and we try to be constructive when we do stuff, because we're not there going, well, this sucks, and that's it. You know,
yeah.
Like that's not. We try to tell them why we think these aren't good, and it's usually based on sound or
Right.
People are like, well, you know, difficulty is to get sound. I'm like, if you can't get good sound for a movie, then don't make a movie. You know,
that sounds terrible,
but
that's a good rule.
Yeah, if you can't get good sound, if you can't get good lighting. And you're using that excuse as, well, it's too expensive to do that. Then I'm like, then don't do it. Because you know, people are paying to see a movie. They want to see and hear the movie.
Yes.
I mean, and that's what I can clearly say. Everything I've seen of yours, you can hear what people are saying. You can see what they're doing. And I mean, some of the acting might be, you know, low budget, you know, actors and stuff acting, but like, that's what you're going to see. If somebody's going and thinking they're saying, you know, the next Dawn of the Dead, that's completely different, you know, then they should be warned ahead of time. This is a low budget film with the no budget cast, you know, or whatever.
So. Right. Right.
Well, thank you so much, Adam. It was a pleasure having you on the show. And like I said, you're welcome back. And we would love to have you as a guest reviewer at some point.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I'd love to be a part of it.
Definitely. And everybody else, join me in 2 weeks. I'll have Amber Doig Thorne on the show. So you'll check her out.
I look forward to that one.
She got to go face-to-face with toe-to-toe with fucking Piglet, you know, and Winnie the Pooh, Pletinani. Oof. All right. Well, everybody, I hope you guys enjoy this. Until then, have a good one. Bye.